We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Vision podcast. Daily, World Cup, post-match, whatever, blah! My brain is still absolutely swiveling as we are recording just minutes after the end of Saudi Arabia versus Mexico and Argentina versus Poland, which is just permutations, and my head is still spinning from all of it, really. Obviously, I'm not Elliot. It's Tim Stillman. As you'll probably have clocked, Elliot's not available tonight, and the way that we decided on who should present the podcast was on fair play points, but that was equal, so not really. It's just I was available, so I did it. But as ever, I'm joined by Phil Costa to kind of break down some real drama on the final match day in groups. God, what groups are these? C and D? Can't even remember. Yeah, C and D. Phil, bring some sense to this absolute ramble. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing? Heart rate back down to normal? Recovered?
No, not at all. Deep breaths. Yeah. No, I don't have like, seriously, I don't have a single dog in this fight. I guess I've got some Australian friends. I've probably got some Danish friends. I've probably got French friends, but Australia kind of sticks out. But I haven't watched any of their games in the tournament. But still, like, the unbelievable tension of all of this. And we were just saying before the recording, I think basically in a World Cup, the best matches are match day three in the group, the final game of the groups, and the semi-finals. Semi-finals, as a general rule, I think are better than finals. And I think that's true in the Champions League. But I don't know about you, Phil, I love match day three, because as much as I hate group stage football generally, when it's three matches and you get all these teams in the mix who probably know they haven't got a chance of winning it, but getting to the last 16 is like such a goal for them. It just felt like a crazy day.
Yeah, we've spoken about it with Elliot, and what I've loved about this World Cup in particular is that there was so much to play for so much of the teams left, so many of the teams left involved. And, you know, obviously France had qualified, Brazil, Qatar were out. But aside from that, everyone was kind of, you know, they had a horse in the race, and it was just brilliant, because like you said, as much as, you know, there might be favorites to go through and teams who are maybe not expecting so much, it's just one of those days where you have to keep a live table next to you just to try and make sense of what's happening, because all of a sudden it can be a green arrow going up and then they concede again, and then it's a red arrow going down and they're in last place and you're just like, what the fuck is going on? but it was just brilliant, and this is what I wanted, because for so long it didn't feel like a World Cup. Mm. And there's been moments and little things happening that have slowly made it closer to a World Cup than, you know, than you would have wanted, you know, because there's been a lot of ill feeling and difficulty getting attached to this World Cup, but there's been a couple of things, and today was just brilliant. I loved every second of it, and this was some classic World Cup calcio.
Yeah, yeah. I think like it was always going to be a slow burner just because of the lack of preparation time. And like you said, like the kind of the political landscape around it, somehow I managed to fit in a Twitter argument with John Barnes about homophobia in Qatar.
Oh, what an idiot he is. I'm so sorry. Since when did he become the spokesperson for morality this week? It's just, oh.
Well, I think he's the spokesperson for some Qatari companies, but we won't go into that. But yeah, like this, and you know, some of the reason, honestly, that I've missed some of the games is because, like, Uruguay, South Korea, if the Premier League's been away a month, I might look at Uruguay, South Korea with different eyes. But like, when it had only been away a week or 10 days, I was a bit like, do you know what? I don't need to watch Uruguay, South Korea. But now we're in the tasty part of the tournament. And let's start at the beginning of the day, the 3 o'clock kickoffs UK time. And well, we kind of took a match each here, and you watched Denmark versus Australia, which I think is probably the only slightly more interesting one, just because both teams had something on it to go through. And I have to say, even at half time, with these two games, I would not have predicted that Australia and Tunisia would win and Australia would go through. What did you make of Denmark versus Australia?
Yeah, totally. I mean, like you said, two teams with plenty to play for, lots on the line. And I mean, my overriding sentiment is that Denmark just genuinely disappointed me and underwhelmed. You know, I think it's been the story of their group stage, really. You know, I don't know which idiot backed them to be dark horses, but, you know, almost as silly as the people who suggested Turkey last
Turkey,
year.
Yeah.
Anyway,
they are the Turkey of the World Cup.
Who would have done that? I mean, yeah. Yeah, but they just seemed kind of hell bent on playing every game as slowly as possible, which was, you know, the complete antithesis of what they were last year. So I didn't really understand why that was happening, because the players were mostly the same, you know, and ideally or theoretically they would have only got better after time, and they had a really good qualifying round, and I just felt so underwhelmed. I mean, today it was just between the centre backs, Højbjerg way too conservative, and I think you would have been better off having two trampolines up front than you know, Braithwaite and Skovolsen, because it just kept bouncing back. And you know, I think Elliot will be happy to hear that the only player really who emerged with any credit was Jesper Lindstrom, who was the only player who was injecting a bit of urgency, a bit of pace into their front line. You know, Joachim Andersen was decent as well. He's got an excellent passing range. But I don't know, there was something missing. And that's not to take anything away from Australia. You know, they fought hard for their win, really hung on towards the end. But for me, the overriding feeling was one of disappointment from Denmark's point of view.
Yeah, I look at Denmark and I really expected them to get through this group fairly comfortably. I always expected Argentina to win it, but I really, Argentina, France to win it, other group. Mm-hmm. But I really expected them to go through quite comfortably. And my impression looking at Denmark in this tournament, and I think this is a common theme among a lot of these middle tier nations, is I look at them and I think back three, like lovely back three, with Kjær and Andersen and Eriksen, lovely, like, creativity. Damsgaard, I know he's had a lot of injuries, but I really rate him as a player. I think Brentford have got like a good pickup there, but they lack a striker. And the problem I kind of look at is not only do they lack a top striker, but all their strikers are so different. Mm. And because none of them's the overwhelming choice, they kept chopping and changing and really changing what they were doing. And I think their goal scoring statistics in this tournament kind of tell you the story for them, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, like you said, Australia scored in the 60th minute and Denmark did not create a single chance of note for the next 36. You know, your World Cup's hanging in the balance. You know you need to win. And they were just strolling about, aimlessly crossing into the box. And it's like, you're better than that. You know that in Euro 2020, they were pushing the wing backs forward, getting Damsgaard, you know, close to goal. But it was just very stale, which is a shame. I mean, I don't know if their form at Euro 2020 was a combination of playing in front of the home crowd, whether it was, you know, a strong sense of togetherness, you know, banding together after the Eriksen incident. I'm not sure, but it was just, yeah, very slow, very passive, and a big shame. But that, again, that's not to take anything away from Australia, who, you know, they didn't produce much going forward, but defensively they really gave everything. I mean, their shape and commitment were brilliant throughout, and that's not me being reductionist. They were simply managing the game as the underdogs, and, you know, they got their goal on the counter, and they, I'm going to turn into a Harry Soutar fan account very slowly, because he, you know, get that man out of Stoke immediately. He was unbelievable. Like, he has the biggest frame I've ever seen. He just looks awkward and gangly, and he shouldn't be good, but he is brilliant. And the amazing thing is, he's only just come back from rupturing his ACL. He played one game for Stoke before the World Cup. So he's coming in completely cold, and he's just bossed the last two games. And oh, sometimes you just need a huge challenge. And he put in three or four today, and I was ready to pump my chest myself, you know, and it was brilliant. He was outstanding.
It's like right up until the end, Australia is just not the team I'd have picked, especially when you look at the way they qualified as well, like that penalty shootout and Redmayne, is it John Redmayne? The backup goalkeeper.
Yes, it is.
And,
I was going to say Eddie, but he's the actor, isn't he?
Yeah. With his kind of antics in the shootout and all of that. And the thing is, I look at this Australia team and I think, 95% you look like most of the Australia teams I've seen at the World Cup. And I heard the coach after the Tunisia game, like, really talking up, like, he kept saying, like, guts, hearts, determinate. Like, he clearly, I think understandably, clearly went into the tournament with a, this is what we're going to come with kind of thing. And because I look at Australia and I think, yeah, you look like the kind of Australia teams I remember, but without that Kewell or Viduka or Cahill type figure. So for them to go through in this group is just absolutely phenomenal. And like, it just, they just never looked like they were going to until they score that goal against Denmark. But so that sets them up for a last 16 tie with Argentina.
It does. It does indeed.
How do you see that one going?
I see kind of a similar formula of the game, really. I think it's going to be Argentina with the ball, Australia sitting back, trying to, you know, contain as much pressure as they can, and then trying to get something on the break. I mean, they've got some good players. You know, Aaron Moy, we know what he's all about. Obviously, I've mentioned Harry Soutar, Matt Ryan in goals, very experienced. I just think going forward, they lack a little bit of quality. But, you know, if you're willing to, you know, not to take a Neil Warnock phrase, but if you're willing to die for 3 points, you never know. Really, you never know. Tournament football is bizarre. And they go in as massive underdogs, but it's an incredible occasion for them. And did you see any of the scenes from, like, Melbourne? And,
like 4 o'clock in the morning.
It looks incredible. Like, genuine, for a nation that's not supposedly, you know, a football nation. I mean, they are getting behind this team, and it's brilliant. I love it. This is what the World Cup should be about.
Yeah, 100%. And there are two stats, I think, to wrap up on this game that I think really tell a story. I think I read something like 60% of Denmark's XG against Tunisia was from set pieces. So that tells you a lot about their kind of lack of creativity. And I don't know how it ended, but I just saw a tweet from Opta Analyst 35 minutes into the game, and the Australia player with the most completed passes was Matt Ryan in goals. So, you know, I think
tells its story.
Yeah. And actually, as a segue into the Tunisia-France game, which I watched, and I'll cover off quickly, like at halftime, Gabby Logan in the UK was on the BBC commentary, and it was 0-0 at the time. And she just said, if you didn't know who these two teams were, and I told you that one of them had made 11 changes and didn't need a result, and the other one really needed a result, really needed a goal, but has trouble scoring goals, you'd know which one is which. And that was really the story of this game for a long time. So France almost flaunting their depth, really, with all these changes. But France had a real Arsenal Europa League feel to me, in that Deschamps didn't make those changes because he wanted to look at other players. Like, Camavinga played at left back. Don't think that's ever happened before. Guendouzi kind of played on the left wing in the first half in a sort of 4-4-2 with Coman kind of pushed up front. It was really weird. But I mean, essentially, like, given that France have already got two injuries, so they're down to a squad of 24, they made 11 changes. Nkunku, Benzema injured. And they still fielded Camavinga, Wesley Fofana. Their captain was Raphael Varane. Saliba didn't even get in. He came on with like 25 minutes to go. I mean, scary depth, but France were massively, massively disjointed. And essentially the way this game went, they just looked disjointed all the way through. Tunisia had the better of the first half. They made 5 changes from their game against Australia. This game had a little bit of extra flavour because of the, shall we say, the geopolitical feeling between Tunisia and France. Mm-hmm. A lot of Tunisia fans in the stadium. And then, you know, Kasri scores a goal in the second half, and he was the only one that was going to score for Tunisia again.
What was Varane doing as well? I saw that so lethargic, wasn't he? I mean, maybe he didn't want to pull anything going into the knockout stages, but it was really crap.
I think that was it. I think having had that injury coming into the tournament and nearly missing it, I kind of think that was in his mind. And then, you know, Kasri scores, and it's like the only play, like, he had a few long range shots. It was very much, it's going to be him or no one for Tunisia. But as soon as that goal goes in, Australia score, and it just renders the whole thing a little bit redundant. And then, like, France bring on Mbappe, Griezmann, like, really unleash the troops. And actually, there was some weird scenes at the end, because you could see the Tunisia players on the bench checking, like, they were watching someone's phone.
I think it was a photographer, wasn't it? I saw the clips. It was really good.
Yeah. And like, one of them asked the Tunisia coach what the score was, and he said, like, forget it, focus. And then it looked like France had equalised anyway, both through Griezmann, and that was disallowed. But essentially, this game, I mean, Tunisia won and they deserved to win. They were much the better team. France clearly didn't really care about this game, to be honest. But a fifth win for an African nation at a World Cup, which is already a record for African nations, which I think is not much comfort for Tunisia. But kind of still a lot of Tunisia fans at the end look reasonably happy, I think, because they beat France, and that has a lot of meaning for them as well. But ultimately, a game that didn't really matter beyond any other reason than that, because of what happened in the original one. What, France now go on to play Poland in the last 16. What have you made of France in this group stage and their chances of going on to win the thing?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I do think Tunisia gave a really good account of themselves during this group stage. And I think it's something that we haven't seen often before, whereas the kind of quote-unquote lesser nations, smaller nations have really come to play. Which I've really enjoyed. And one particular player, Aissa Laidouni, he's playing in the midfield for Tunisia. He plays in Hungary. I mean, someone's going to go and snap him up.
Ferencváros, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, someone's going to go and take him in January. And, you know, that's a gem that somebody's discovered here. But in terms of France, I mean, it was clear, like you said, this was very much the French B team. You know, there was like players like Jordan Veretout playing, you know, Camavinga at left back, as you mentioned. You know, it was very much who's fit, can you play, whose legs can I rest for the next game. So I don't think there was too much on the line for France. I think their first 11 is very settled, as it usually is under Didier Deschamps. But I think they've got gears to go. And when you've got a solid enough base, I think defensively they're strong. You know, whether it's Varane, Konate, Saliba, they've got a lot of options there. Tchouaméni just kind of screening the front. It's very strong. It's very impressive. So for me, along with Brazil, they're one of the favourites. And I'm sure we'll touch on Poland a bit later on, but I don't think I've seen a team offer so little in three games and still somehow go
through. In the group. Yeah.
Shocking. Really, really bad. If it wasn't for some heroics from a certain goalkeeper, they would be nowhere near the knockout stage. But hey, they are. So, and they'll believe they've got a chance, but I would be astonished if France do not dispatch them pretty easily and swiftly. And if they don't, then it would be a one hell of an upset.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they lost to Switzerland in the last 16 of the Euros last year. I think Switzerland are a better team than Poland have looked. But I mean, for me with France, I think you're like France remind me of Brazil, actually, in that they kind of look like an international team should look, where the eight players kind of behind the ball, the seven or eight players behind the ball all just know what they're doing. And then they've got this nicely balanced front three. And like, you look at the fact they lost Benzema. And even though Giroud, quality-wise, is not in Benzema's class, tactically, he fits perfectly His job is not to be the main man. His job is to, like, let Mbappe and facilitate. To a lesser degree. Yeah, so it doesn't really matter. And then the thing that really makes them look weaker before the tournament, losing that midfield double pivot of Pogba and Kante, and then they just put Tchouaméni and Rabiot. And again, Rabiot, a player I've never really been sure about. In fact, he reminds me of Guendouzi in so many different ways. But that Tchouaméni, Rabiot kind of double pivot actually looks pretty good.
He's found his Matuidi. Yeah,
exactly. And it looks to me, in fact, on the basis of this tournament so far, that Pogba, I think Kante's kind of on the way out anyway, but Pogba and Kante might be a thing of the past anyway, that like they might have just solved that problem. So, and the other reason they remind me of Brazil is I just think like Mbappe is maybe their Neymar, in that they do have other quality attacking players that can come in, but Mbappe is the one player you look at and go, oh, you'd lose something that you can't quite replace there. So if they keep him fit, I think they've got as good a chance as anyone, quite frankly, unless they France it up and have a big fight over dinner or something, or who got the last bit of bread at lunch or something like that. They could go very, very deep. So they play Poland. I think they should smash Poland. And why don't we come on to Argentina? But well, I kind of think we've got to take Argentina, Poland and Saudi Arabia, Mexico together. Why don't we start with Argentina, Poland, considering that's... why don't we start with the first halves of these games and then we can just go, for the second half of the game. So first half of Argentina, Poland for you, with a bit of an Arsenal contribution in there as well. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it was already more positive for me before the game even kicked off, because Enzo Fernandez starting 11, Julian Alvarez in the starting 11. And for me, they just seemed like, especially Enzo, just seemed like such an obvious pick. And it took him two horrible, stodgy performances to finally get him in there. And I just think as good as Lautaro Martinez is, he's not the kind of striker that can run beyond. You know, he likes the ball to feet. He's in and around the box. And I just think Julian Alvarez stretches defenses, you know, and I just think Argentina desperately lacked that during the first couple of games. So even before the game had kicked off, for me, that was an instant positive. And they took control of the ball very early on. I mean, it was totally understandable. Poland didn't want any of it. And when they did have it, they were just booting it up to Lewandowski, who suddenly had Christian Romero, Otamendi breathing down his neck, and you know it's impossible for him to do anything there. But
did you see Szczesny's pass map from this game?
No, I haven't.
It looks like the opening titles of Dad's Army, with just big red arrows going towards
straight in the corner.
Yeah,
it wasn't pretty. I mean, it was already 4-5-1, and they made their intentions very clear. But I thought Argentina looked a lot sharper, a lot crisper than they had done in the previous games. You know, Messi was actually finding some space, but more importantly, there were people around him too often. Yep. Messi was receiving the ball and there was nobody within 20, 30 yards. And it was just, you know, how can you not support this man? You know, he can't do everything anymore. He's not 28. So they looked to be more of a balanced side, particularly in midfield, which was a good sign. A couple of chances, but nothing super clear cut. And then obviously, you know, the penalty, this, can I even call it a decision? It was a farce, a penalty farce. And somehow they called him over to the monitor. And as soon as they go over, you just think he's going to give it, isn't he?
Yeah.
And that was, I can't even, it's just not a penalty. It's just not a penalty, is it? And I don't know what you thought about it, but if we give those, it's going to be the old cliche. You're going to give 3 or 4 a game.
Yeah, dreadful. I mean, he missed a punch. Like, I really don't think that...
It wasn't even a punch. He just, he tried to palm it away.
Yeah. And, like, I don't think he really stopped anyone doing anything either. Like, no. I don't think it interrupted the flow of play. I mean, so I didn't, you know, I saw the highlights of this game, didn't watch it. I have thoughts about Argentina just because I have watched them a fair bit over the last 2 years. And they've looked shit hot for about 2 years now. They really have. But I think one of the things that happened to them in this tournament, they've obviously got a really inexperienced coach in Scaloni. This is the only head coach job he's ever had, and Argentina got him because he was cheap, basically. But he kind of stumbled because the first couple of games of his reign, he wanted to play formation. It didn't work. They got rubbish results. He changed. It worked. And he just stuck with it. And actually, the Lautaro Martinez and Messi thing was working quite well. Di Maria and Lo Celso around him. Lo Celso has been a big loss for Argentina. And the thing is, the story of the last 2 years, it's just worked for Argentina. And I think what happened was they lost that Saudi Arabia game, which to me was just a freak result. And actually, I mean, they weren't great, Argentina, but honestly, it was just a bit of a freak. And because A, Scaloni is quite inexperienced, and B, one of the things, I know Chite talked a lot about this over the years with Brazil, about wanting them to have tough friendlies, and Argentina and Brazil hate the Nations League because it denies them the chance to play big European opposition. And one of the things Chite always talked about was like, I kind of want to see my team go 1-0 down in some of these friendlies because, frankly, they don't against other South American teams. And I think the story for Argentina is everything's just gone right for 2 years and then something went wrong in the first game and Scaloni massively, massively filled his pants and, like, made all these changes that I don't think he really needed to make. And, yeah, it sounds like they were a little bit more like the Argentina of the last 2 years rather than the one we've seen in Qatar from what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they looked like a team today. Too often in this World Cup, they were too disjointed, lacking any kind of attacking cohesion. You know, I thought Rodrigo de Paul was incredibly fortunate to start after his disaster class in the last game. And this first 45 minutes, he was dreadful again. I mean, to be fair, he turned it around. But I just think having McAllister and Enzo Fernandez gave them a lot of youth and energy and bite. And they really sort of benefited from that. And, you know, Julian Alvarez didn't touch the ball so much. It wasn't like he was involved like a Gabriel Jesus was. But whenever he was on the shoulder, you thought, oh, you know, there's a way in for them there. And I just think a couple of changes, freshen things up. It helped that Poland didn't come to play. And, you know, even though it was 0-0 at halftime, it didn't take them long to finally get the breakthrough. And it was McAllister in the end, supporting from a deep position, you know, kind of slow finish, but one of those ones that are just out of the reach of the goalie and, you know, right in the corner. So he took it well. And from then on, Messi was just, you could see the confidence, the weight just disappeared from his shoulders. They were getting in time after time. And that was Argentina. That's the Argentina I kind of expected before the tournament, because they were on a 36-game unbeaten run.
They nearly broke the record.
Like two games away
from the all-time record.
They're not chumps. They're not chumps. And like you said, I think they just lost the first game, panic mode activated, but they looked much more like their normal selves today.
Yeah, and I think with Alvarez, again, just to wrap up on this half, with Alvarez, like, I do think Messi has, I mean, Messi always looks good, but like when I look at his career, his best Argentina form, I think, really came with Tevez. You know, look at the partnership he had with Villa at Barcelona, like that striker that just says, I'm going to run the channels and push everyone back away from you. Like, I think that he does look generally look quite a bit better like that. And yeah, and I think, by the way, one of the things this World Cup is showing that maybe we kind of already knew is the quality of scouting at Brighton, because Moises Caicedo and Alexis McAllister making a big impact. And imagine if someone had told you even 8 years ago that two Brighton players, like imagine someone told you after the 2014 World Cup that two Brighton players would be kind of lighting up the group stages. But another one of the reasons I kind of look at this season to switch it back to Arsenal as a bit of a an opportunity is because Alvarez is not yet world class, but he will be. He will be very soon. And soon they'll have like Alvarez and Haaland, and then I think it's kind of good night for everyone else. But that was the first half of that game. The first half of Saudi Arabia, Mexico, I mean, atmosphere-wise, because of the proximity, I think, of Saudi Arabia to Qatar, which is pretty much driving distance, both teams needed to win. Just the kind of game I love, really. Not that high on quality, but the intensity, both in the stands and on the pitch, it was a proper slugfest. Actually, very even first half. But one of the interesting things, I think, that opens up the madness of the second half is that Argentina score just before Saudi Arabia, Mexico kicks off for the second half. I've got no idea if that transmitted to the players. I kind of doubt it at that point. It was while they were walking back on the pitch. So that really, that kind of makes you think, okay, Poland are done for here. And then, my word, I don't know how much you were watching the second half, but as much as the first half was even, the second half, Mexico took the gloves off. And again, we're talking about another team here to join Tunisia, Denmark, I think Saudi Arabia as well. Mexico looked to me like well-organized, well-coached, et cetera, but their attacking game plan is basically try and give the ball to Irving Lozano. And Irving Lozano is just not quite, you know, we talk about Poland and trying to get the ball to Lewandowski. And unfortunately for Poland, Lewandowski is an elite player, but he needs service. And I don't think Poland can get it to him. For Mexico, they can get the ball to Lozano, but Lozano's just, he's a good player, but he's not like an absolutely top draw player. But they get a goal from a corner, and then Chavez hits this absolutely unbelievable left-footed free kick, postage stamp, top corner, keeper beaten all ends up. And then it's permutations time, because Argentina go 2-0 up against Poland. And I don't know what, I mean, I think it's beyond analysis, beyond your actual emotional reaction. But for a good 15, 20 minutes, we had the situation where it was going to be decided on fair play, and Poland had two fewer yellow cards than Mexico, and Mexico needed a goal, and the Poland game finishes earlier. So where do you even start with the last 20 minutes of these two games and these three teams who are just really vying for something?
I mean, it was like watching Mexico on 1.5 times speed. It was just every time I looked at the screen, I had one laptop with Argentina on my other one next to me on Mexico. And it was like every time I looked up, Mexico were just on the wing sprinting, looking for people in the box. And I was just like, this is brilliant. You know, it was because Saudi Arabia don't really do things in half measures as well. So they're not really the team that sit back. They like to play a high line. They like to snap into tackle. So there was just acres of space behind their defensive line. And it was 1 minute it was Lozano, then it was Chavez, and you know, then they brought on substitutes, and then they were chucking the ball into Jimenez, and then it was corners, free kicks. I mean, Chavez nearly hit another worldie over a free kick as well, but the keeper saved it. And it was just, they scored the offside goal, you know, and then it was just madness. And then, like you said, you're looking at yellow cards. And then, you know, Hector Herrera got a silly one, but then Krikoviak got a silly one. So it like leveled out again. And it was just, it was brilliant. I mean, I had, you know, the live table up on my phone the whole time. I think it zapped all of my battery just having it there. just really, really good. And the thing is, ultimately, Mexico, I don't think they showed their best football during this group stages. I thought they were quite flat for large spells of their other two games. But like you said, that second 45, it leaves you with a feeling of why couldn't you show that before? Because in terms of what they showed generally, I thought they showed a lot more than Poland. But for me, you know, the worst team, the less adventurous team is going out. And it's a huge shame because, you know, the scenes when I can't remember who it was who scored the offside goal, but it was just incredible, you know, limbs up in the air, and the fans were, you know, going crazy in the corners. And it was such an amazing moment that got cut very short. But that's those kind of mad games where you're looking at goal difference 1 minute and yellow cards the next, and who's got a corner here, and then it's injury time, and then Argentina finishes, and then Mexico's got another 5 minutes to go, and it was amazing. It was just brilliant.
And the real kicker was Saudi Arabia scoring, because that looked like the least likely thing that was going to happen. Like, because I think like Saudi Arabia can largely come away from this tournament with their heads held pretty high. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think their manager is probably going to get, with all due respect, I think he's gonna get a job, probably somewhere else. He'll probably have enough credit in the bank for that. And they were brave in the way they did things. I look at this group and I just kind of think, I really wish like I could just give Lewandowski to either Saudi Arabia or Mexico, because like they both to me just look like they did so much more than those teams, but they just didn't have that kind of ability to not even just to score, but to create threat. And yeah, for Mexico, ultimately they score from a corner and a free kick. And obviously those goals all count the same, but in this whole tournament, they haven't really opened anyone up. And that, I think that's what's really cost them. But for me, Poland, like, you know, like we're saying about all these teams who look well coached and they've come to play, as you said, but perhaps miss that kind of figurehead. And Poland have that figurehead, but I don't know about you. I felt like this after the Euros. I felt like Lewandowski, he's that player that's helping them to qualify for tournaments. But when it comes to tournaments, like, he needs service. That's the problem. Like, he's not the guy who's going to make something himself. And I kind of think that's why Poland don't look that inspirational. I don't know about you.
I mean, the thing is, Poland do have a couple of good attacking players. I mean, they've got Zielinski, who's one of the most formed players in Europe at the moment. But for me, it wasn't just the service; it was just the isolation. You know, they were so keen to defend and not give Argentina any kind of opening that they just neglected their own attacking quality and their own play, which for me is understandable in one sense, but also in another, you know, the coach will feel like his ideas have been vindicated after that. But you're leaving a lot to chance like that, you know. And I understand that they can't be Brazil and go and sit on the halfway line and just camp other teams in, but there were some moments where they had a chance to break, or there were some moments where they got to the final third and you know, the end product, awful. You know, there was one they had on the break, Lewandowski played it out to the right wing and the guy just miscontrolled it and it trickled out. And I just looked like straight into my hands. I was like, what the hell was that? But you know, it's how it is. It's how it finished. You know, commiserations to Mexico, because I really enjoyed their second half performance, but ultimately it just felt like a little bit, too little too late, I guess. And I'm sure Poland won't be feeling too great about their date with France in the next round.
No, indeed. But, you know, I guess they'll watch videos of France, Switzerland from the Euros last time. I guess before we wrap up as well, the news that Ben White has left the England camp and is unlikely to return due to personal reasons. We don't, it's none of our business what those are, but, you know, obviously hope it's nothing too serious. And to, at the risk of finishing on a downer, just a real downer for him, having like just really made his way in the squad and not seen any game time yet.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, wishing him the best, obviously. I mean, it kind of felt ominous, the statement from Arsenal. I mean, even the one from England felt a bit ominous. So I'm just hoping that everything is okay with him. And, you know, it's never nice to see, because I think he absolutely deserved his place in that squad, and we're all really happy for him. And it's just, you know, not a nice moment for him, to have to leave early. And it seems like it's for quite a serious reason. So hopefully everything's okay with him, and we're wishing him all the best.
Yeah, sure. And, there are five either Arsenal goalkeepers or ex-goalkeepers at the tournament: Matt Turner, Wojciech Szczesny, Aaron Ramsdale, Matt Ryan, and I'm missing one here. Emi Martinez, that's the one.
Oh, yeah, Emi, of course, yeah.
And they're all through to the knockouts. And in fact, I believe all of the Arsenal players at the moment are through, although obviously Ghana and Japan have got some work to do yet. But yeah, at least as much as Poland have been a bit rubbish to watch, I mean, in terms of Arsenal interest, Wojciech Szczesny having quite a tournament so far.
What a huge hand that was, my word. I mean, it's the classic halfway penalty. It's not low, it's not high from Messi, but I mean, he hit it well. And he's not only guessed right, but put a massive hand on that. So it was brilliant. And it kind of felt a bit, you know, justice after the terrible decision. But, you know, that's two penalties saved now, because he saved one against Saudi Arabia. And actually it was part of a brilliant double save. And Lionel Messi is the first player in history to have two penalties saved at the World Cup. So,
ah, well, okay.
There you go. Quite a stat there from someone you wouldn't expect it from.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, Szczesny, absolutely the hero for Poland, really, because if any one of those goes in, they're going out. And actually that Messi penalty, it reminded me a bit of the Bale penalty against USA, where Matt Turner gets a hand on it. It also reminds me of the save that Szczesny made from Di Natale when we played Udinese in the Champions League qualifier in 2011. Oof,
dark days.
Yeah. On the different side, and because Di Natale is right-footed, but very, very similar save. Like you said, like really strong hand. And everyone knows I hold a massive candle for Szczesny. I have to say that, like, not that it's dimmed, but I feel like Ramsdale's a very similar character, similarly likable, similar goalkeeper. And actually, for the first time since Szczesny left, I feel really comfortable with our goalkeeper. So, for me, it was nice to be reminded, like seeing an ex that, like, you've got past the kind of, you know, the sadness of the breakup, and you're just glad to see them doing well.
Yeah. Yeah. You mean you didn't like, big dustbin Dave Ospina too much, Tim?
No, I like my goalkeepers in front of the goal line.
To kick past the halfway line.
Exactly. Just a personal preference there. I'm not telling anyone else how to feel. Anyway, I think we've just about caught everything from a pretty breathless day. Another one incoming tomorrow. What have we got tomorrow? Is it the Germany, Spain, Japan?
Yeah, it's Croatia, Belgium, Canada, Morocco, and then in the evening it's Japan, Spain, Costa Rica, Germany. So
that's it.
Potential for more scenes is what I'm going
to
say.
I think I don't know which one to watch out of Japan, Spain, and Germany, Costa Rica. I think I might opt for Japan, Spain, just because, you know, hopefully Tomiyasu will be fit for that game, and there's a little bit of Arsenal interest. But again, like, that's got two teams who are hoping to go through. So I actually think that Germany Spain game on match day two, that for me marked the moment the tournament really started, to be honest. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that group finishes. But anyway, that's going to be for tomorrow night's World Cup Daily, which I probably won't be on. Elliot will probably be back in the presenting chair for that. But until then, thank you as ever to Phil Costa, who you can follow on Twitter at, is it Phil underscore Costa or underscore Phil Costa?
Underscore Phil Costa.
Underscore Phil Costa. Yes. I should have looked that up. Underscore Phil Costa, who'll be back with Elliot tomorrow night to look over some of those games, Morocco, Belgium, Germany, Spain, Japan, all going for stuff. So probably another pretty hair-raising evening. And I have to say, I'm glad I don't have to take notes tomorrow night on that one. But thanks very much for joining us. Do join us again tomorrow night for that. And we will speak to you after your country 10, someone else's country 0.